You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.
Hello there, you're very welcome to West Limerick 102 FM. This is Patrick Sheehan. I'm going to be with you for the next hour or so with Tech Thursday, looking at all the latest in tech and a bit of entertainment and anything else in between. As always, you can call 069-66200 or you can text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800. Any questions you might have, I'll answer them on the next show. You can also email me, patrick102fm@gmail.com, and I'll answer any questions you might have. So to start off with today is actually... it's not a question, but it is a very important issue. And I was speaking to a member of the station here, a show presenter, who unfortunately was a victim of an online and kind of, I think phones might have been involved as well, but the victim of a scam. And what I have done here today is look up an article kind of from the NIA in the US, but it's pretty much the same all over the world. And of the kind of common scams for people to look out for. And this one is specifically kind of for older people to give a clue what to look out for. And if you hear, you know, certain things being said over the phone or something like that, you know what to look out for. But this can happen on for the victim here was actually, it started online. It started on Facebook. So she was telling me that somebody impersonating a friend of hers messaged her on Facebook Messenger. And this is happens quite regularly. So what they do is they either hack into another person's account or they create a clone of it. So they get, say, the person is Margaret O'Brien, and they make an account, call it Margaret O'Brien, steal images from the real Margaret O'Brien's account, put it all, set it up as theirs, put in the date of birth, maybe even create a few posts. Oh, lovely weather today, a picture of a dinner or something like that, all stolen pictures off of somewhere else on the internet, put it up to make it look like a legitimate account, and then send out friend requests to the real Margaret O'Brien's friends. And then if they accept, all they'll see it. I've done it myself where I've got a friend request, and I said, I thought I was already friends with that person. And then I checked it, and it didn't look legit, but it would definitely catch a lot of people, because you think, oh yeah, I know them, I'll press it. Because I probably could have accepted it, because I'm on Facebook a long time. I could have accepted somebody as a friend maybe 7 or 8 years ago, or whenever Facebook started up and I first joined it. So, and I might have forgotten, and, you know, I could, that person, I thought I was friends with them, I'll accept it anyway, kind of thing, if it looked legit enough. So it's very easy to get into that. But anyway, she got a message from a person that she thought she knew, because it was the name and the picture and everything else, saying that there was a kind of a scheme available to help out elderly people, where they can get a kind of a subsidy and get a kind of a lump sum payment. And they played the game very well, and they kept sending messages and sending links and put them in contact with the person, and kind of kept it going, and eventually they said, you know, the money is on the way, but we need a processing fee, kind of a thing like that. And what they asked for is a very common thing if you know about it, but unfortunately she didn't know about it, is these gift cards. So what they asked for is to go to your local shop and buy gift cards, and then come back and rub the back of the gift card to reveal the number, like a scratch card, and then you give them the number, then they can register the card on their other end, and they get the money for it. But of course it's a scam, so it's not a payment for anything, and that's not a normal way any legitimate bank or solicitor or anything else would ask to be paid. They would ask to be paid by a bank transfer or cash or check or anything like that. They would never ask for gift cards. That's not a normal way of payment, but it's a great way to quickly get money from one place to another, a very easy way of doing it. And so unfortunately she sent a number of gift cards to them as payment for processing and payment for paperwork and payment for different things to enable the money to be released. But unfortunately, there wasn't any money and it was a scam. And unfortunately, she got caught for a few euro. But she kind of talked about it herself. And, you know, she in the hope that other people will not get caught the same way. And that's what I'm doing as well today. I have an article here kind of outlining some of the common scams out there. But another thing that helps an awful lot, if you are a person that uses YouTube or watches videos on YouTube or something like that, there's lots of different accounts. And what they do is they catch the scammers. They keep them on the phone for days and days pretending to be a victim so that they're not catching other victims at the same time. Or they can go further. They can get into their computers, shut them down, or report them to the police, or name and shame them, put up their pictures and say, this is the scammer or something like that. So that there's a few different ones. The main guy, actually, one of the world's preeminent kind of scam catchers or scam baiters or whatever they call them, is Jim Browning. And he's an Irish guy, and he kind of helped to create and perfect a lot of the software that's able to reverse hack into their computers and shut them down, delete their files, do different things to put them out of operation. So from a lot of their videos, a lot of the scams, a high majority of them seem to be set up in India, a certain amount in Africa, in Nigeria, and also in the Middle East. Now they're starting, especially these ones that are more aimed at men and are kind of women pretending that they are looking for relationships and things like that, and using that as a way to get money from men. So it seems to be the predominant one of any of the ones the videos I've watched of those. But so Jim Browning would be one of the main guys. There's Scammer Payback. There's a few different ones on YouTube, and I would definitely, they are quite entertaining to watch too. And you know, it's great when they catch them or they prank them, and you know, they make an entertainment out of it, because obviously they need people to watch. But it's also very educational, because you learn their tactics. You see, I've watched their videos, and then I've been doing something on the computer and suddenly something pops up and you have a virus kind of thing on the computer. And I know straight away, oh, that's one of those scam baiters. They're trying to get me. So I know how to look at it straight away. I know what to look for straight away. So it's very, very educational too, as well as being entertaining and everything like that. So it's definitely worth watching some of those videos as a kind of an educational tool, as well as a bit of entertainment to get to know their tactics, how they do it, what to look out for. Because there are so many methods nowadays. You know, you get the phone call with the fake voice saying your Amazon account, your bank account, your anything else is this and that. And, you know, click the link or press a number and get to the next level, and then somebody will talk to you and try to get the money out of you. Or there's lots of different ones. A lot of those ones on the videos are people who say are on their computer, and all of a sudden something pops up and it says, you have a virus, ring this number and we'll be able to unlock your computer. But actually it just goes full screen on your computer, but all you have to do is go to the bottom and right click and close window. Or sometimes they try to hide the X in the corner so you can't close the window or something like that, you know, the way it pops up. But all you have to do is worst case scenario, press the button, turn off your computer, and then reboot it, and it'll be gone. It's just a pop-up page. It's not a virus or anything like that most of the time, unless you click into something like that. But if you're just browsing and something pops up, you can usually just close it down most of the time. They trick some people into seeing this thing. It's flashing. There's lights flashing everywhere. You have a virus and it's loading, and there's a loading screen, and it's all a kind of a scare tactic to scare you. And then there's a number, and ring this number and we'll be able to help you. And then they pretend to be Microsoft. They pretend to be Amazon. They pretend to be Norton antivirus. They pretend to be lots of different ones. And they have a few different ways. They either pretend to help you, even though they do nothing, or they say your due a refund because of this or something like that. There's lots of different refund scams as well. The phone call ones like to do refunds that you have been charged by Amazon and you shouldn't have been charged. So we're going to process now giving you your money back. And then they ask you to install TeamViewer or AnyDesk. And when they get you to install TeamViewer or AnyDesk apps, they'll tell you to type in AnyDesk, type in TeamViewer. Then they can take control of your computer. And they show you then, they open your online banking. Or they get you to open your online banking. And then they make your screen go dark. And then they can edit the script of the page. So what that is, you have your online banking up and it says you have €100 in your bank. They can make the screen go dark. And in the background, they can open the script of the page itself, which isn't changing your online banking, but it's changing what you see on the screen for a second. Until you move or until you refresh or until you close the window. But they can make €100 look like €100,000. They can edit the script. And what it is it's just showing everything on the screen in script. And it's a little trick that programmers and things can do. So where it says 100, they can add in as many zeros as they want. And they can say, oh, you know, you have €10,000 in your bank instead of 100. And so what they do using this trick is they say they're giving you a refund. And then they offer, they give you a fake form. And please type your name here. Please type the amount here of the refund. So they say they're giving you €100 back and you have €100 in your account. So please type 100 and then you press 100 and then they press another two zeros and press enter straight away. And then they say, oh, did you accidentally press 1,000 instead of 100? Now I'll show you your bank account. Look, you're after getting 1,000, even though it's just an edited page. If you actually press the little refresh button in the top corner, it would go back to your real, your €100 bank balance. No money has been added in, but they can make it look like that for a second, enough for you to see it. But they actually just changed the script on the page. So what they do is they tell you, oh, look, you have 1,100. And you should only have 200 to include the 100 we're after giving you back. But now you have 1,100 because you pressed a zero and you're after getting 1,000 instead of 100 cash back. So what we need you to do is send us back the money. And if you say, oh, I don't trust this or things like that, then they can get angry. They can use different tactics against you. They can say, I'm going to get fined for this by my boss and my children are going to go hungry unless you give me my money back and all this kind of thing. And they try to scare you. They'll shout at you. They'll curse at you. They'll use whatever they think will work to get you to give them the money. And then they'll send you for the gift cards or they'll get you to put cash in the post and they'll get you to wrap it up and cover it and hide it very well and then send it to an address. Sometimes they can have dummy addresses. They could have an address in Ireland. They could get you to post it to Dublin and they could have some PO box or they could have a money mule working in Dublin, working anywhere, taking the money and processing it, taking their cut and sending it to India, sending it to Nigeria, sending it to wherever they're working out of. And that's a business that they run, a scamming business. So that's another method. There's lots of different ones, but these are all the ones I know off the top of my head. But let's have a look at the article. I'm talking out for 13 minutes myself, but let's have a look and see what the article says, because I'm sure they'll have a bit more detail as well. Older adults are often the target of scams. Scammers are savvy and convincing, and their scams are designed to catch people off guard. Don't be ashamed if you think you or someone you know has been the victim of a scam. It can happen to anybody. Common scams aimed at older adults include government impersonator scams, such as someone posing as a Medicare or a healthcare representative here, HSE, something like that, asking for account information, fake prizes, sweepstakes and lottery scams in which you are asked to pay money or provide account information to claim winnings. Computer tech support scams, they're very common as well, in which a scammer tells you that your computer has a problem, has a virus, anything like that, and wants you to pay for support services to fix it. The grandparent scam, in which a caller pretends to be a grandchild or other relatives in distress. That can happen with messages too. Sometimes they can message saying, "Grandma, can you help me?" or something like that. And, "Oh, who is this? Who is this? Is this David?" Or, "Oh, yeah, this is David. Can you send me money?" or something like that. They can often send out random messages, like phishing, hoping to catch somebody. And they can send it out to, they often buy on the dark web bunches of phone numbers and send out the same message to 10,000 phone numbers, hoping one will come back saying, "Oh, is that you?" Or, and then they have a victim. Here are a few steps you can take to help protect yourself and your loved ones from scams. Don't give out sensitive personal information over the phone or in response to an email, social media post, or text message. Sensitive information includes your PPS number, bank account information, credit card numbers, PINs, and passwords. Check incoming bills, including utility bills and credit card statements, for charges that you didn't authorize. Contact the utility provider, credit card company, or your bank if you see any charges you don't recognize. Protect your electronic accounts by keeping the security software on your computer and smartphone up to date and by using multi-factor authentication when possible. Don't transfer money to strangers or someone over the phone. Similarly, never buy a gift card to pay someone over the phone. Once you transfer money or share the numbers on the back of the gift card, there's usually no way to get your money back. If someone is trying to scam you, they may threaten you or pressure you to act immediately. If this happens, don't panic. Slow down. Think about what the person is saying. If you suspect it's a scam, end the call and talk to someone you trust. If someone rings you telling you they're from your bank, you know, say, "Sorry, I'm not sure who I'm talking to here," and hang up. Go to your bank branch or ring your bank directly with the official phone number of the bank and make sure who it is. You know, if you're ever in doubt, they're not going to ever be angry with you, threaten you, anything like that, any of these legitimate companies. So don't ever feel ashamed of that. And they understand that people are being scammed. So even if it's a legit person ringing you and a follow-up, they will understand if you're not able to talk and if you feel you want to go into the branch or if you feel you want to ring back on a different number or something like that. They'll never pressure you for anything like that. So don't ever feel under pressure. One reason that scammers target older adults is they are less likely to report suspected fraud. And they say about phone numbers here, but this is for in the US. But I'm sure you could contact your local Gardaí and they would be, if you have been the victim of a fraud, and just to let them know. So, that's some information there. And hopefully that was a bit helpful. Some of the things to look out for. And if in doubt, hang up and ring the legitimate person, ask a family member, ask somebody else, just to confirm something. And don't give out your personal information, don't give money to people over the phone and things like that, unless you're the one that made the call, it's to a legitimate business, you're just paying for a product that you know that you're ordering yourself, and it's off your own side of things. But incoming people trying to ask you for this, give you a gift, you know, something like that, just be very, very wary about it, I suppose. And hopefully that helps. If it helps one person from being scammed, it's a good thing that we talked about this today. So I hope that has been helpful for people. So let's have a look at some of the latest in tech. Asus's new OLED laptops run on the latest AI-capable chips. The new Asus VivoBook S series lineup and ZenBook 14 OLED at UM3406, it says here, currently start at $749, probably around the same in euro. They've released a new laptop model, the Asus VivoBook S series and ZenBook 14 OLED, along with offering OLED displays. The laptops run on some of the latest AMD and Intel processors. The laptops haven't been put to the test, but the new chips should be able to better handle AI with neural processing units built in, while improving power efficiency and making gaming, multitasking and editing faster. The keyboard even sports dedicated Copilot keys that allow for easy access to Windows 11 AI tools. Three of the VivoBook S laptops range in size from 14 to 16 inches and are powered by the latest Intel Core Ultra 9, while a fourth model is also 16 inches, comes with AMD Ryzen 8040 series chip. There really is almost nothing in it now, or one is better than the other back and forth, AMD and Intel. It was always kind of, I was always, oh, get an Intel, get an i5, get an whatever you can afford, the highest i3, i5, i9, i7, anything you can afford. But now AMD are up there with them, if not ahead of them in a lot of places. So I wouldn't be as afraid as I used to be of getting an AMD, computers with AMD chip. Maybe I'd even favor AMD, really, in a lot of ways. The 14-inch VivoBook S model offers 120Hz OLED panels for smoother scrolling, while the larger models offer 3.2K displays. In contrast, the ZenBook 14 OLED comes armed with just the AMD Ryzen 7 8840HS processor. The laptop is also limited to a 60Hz panel. And while, like the VivoBook, it comes with USB-C ports, a HDMI 2.1 port, and a 3.5mm audio jack, it lacks a micro SD card reader. All the laptops also support Dolby Atmos and come equipped with Asus's ErgoSense keyboards, which include customizable RGB lights, an unusual feature to find in a non-gaming keyboard. The VivoBook starts at £749, while the ZenBook starts at £999. So that's some new laptops on the market. WWE went big on AR at WrestleMania 40. AR effects have become a key part of entrances and other aspects of WWE TV over the last several years, far outlasting the company's experiments with VR. This was the first WrestleMania produced under Endeavor, which acquired WWE last year and combined it with the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, to form a new company known as TKO. On Saturday night, WrestleMania 40 featured Dwayne The Rock Johnson's first match since 2016, saw him partner in a tag team match with Roman Reigns. So let's see what they had to, what had to do with AR. So I know the UFC themselves have used a lot of augmented reality, which is overlays on in place, on they have something pop up in the middle of the octagon with all the different writing on it, or the stats of the fighters or something like that, and they can do big overlays which look really cool. So obviously the WWE are using some of that technology now as well. So that's, I suppose, now that they've kind of formed together, it's been used together, and they have been exploring new production and presentation techniques. Fans are noticing all new camera angles and a different feel to WWE's live programming. Shots have been longer to breathe, a welcome change compared to the whiplash camera cuts that were a hallmark of TV broadcasts under the company's former head of production, Kevin Dunn. It's nothing drastic yet, but Levesque created some of that innovation to Lee Fitting, an ESPN veteran who the company hired to start the start of this year to lead its media and production unit and bring fresh ideas to the table. I'm trying to find the VR section of it. The company has dabbled in VR and 360-degree videos through the years, and the WWE Network has been groundbreaking for its time, even if it eventually shut down to make way for Peacock's much bigger audience. As in recent years, WWE has made heavy use of AR graphics, though both nights of the show that involved six cameras of 30 total used for the show had the ability to display AR graphics. Whether it was the versus screen before each match or custom entrance visuals for many performers. Maybe the UFC got it from them, if they're using it for years. But the UFC have been doing the same kind of thing as well. So something new for WrestleMania 40 was the inclusion of Beacon AR tech, which attached AR to talent and let them walk through it. as seen in Becky Lynch's entrance in the clip below. So there's a clip on The Verge, oh, where you can see them walking through. Oh yeah, so that's very well done. They had like a giant AR book kind of opening up and telling her story, and all of a sudden then she burst out through the book, and she was walking out onto the into the arena to do her wrestling. So Becky Lynch, of course, is originally from Limerick, but grew up in Dublin, but she's a proud Limerick girl originally, so and doing very well over there in the WWE. So yeah, that was AR used in the WWE, and of course it's used in the UFC as well, and now they're kind of merged into the one company. Go Cycle now sells a carbon fiber balance bike. It's €400, too much for a 2.6 kg gateway bike for your tiny tot. So this is a kid's bike. It's €400, but it automatically balances. It's like having stabilizers without having stabilizers. It's kind of built in. When they tire, you can just load the Go Cycle Mini into your new Go Cycle cargo e-bikes to teach your kid. Oh no, so this is a mini one that actually you can get to go with the bigger version. They just have a picture of the smaller one here. You can teach your kid all about multimodal lifestyles and brand cohesiveness. Deliveries are expected to start in October. Or maybe that's the price of the little one to go with your bigger one that you paid £1,000 for or whatever, or a couple of £1,000. But yeah, it's a little mini bike that has kind of balancing stabilizers built into it. So to help kids learn how to cycle. Apple's antitrust case is getting a new judge. Judge Michael E. Fabiraz has recused himself from the case. Okay, so the former judge is leaving. The Department of Justice's massive antitrust case against Apple will unfold before a new judge. A court filing on Wednesday reveals that Judge Michael E. Fabiraz has determined that his recusal is necessary under the Code of Conduct for US judges. The filing says disqualification is mandatory and cannot be remitted by the parties. Judge Julian Xavier Niels, whom President Joe Biden nominated to the US District Court in 2021, will preside over the case instead. It's not clear why the judge was disqualified from the case, but there are a couple of possibilities. The specific rule mentioned in the filing, Canon 3C1, D says a judge must disqualify themselves from a proceeding when the judge's impartiality might reasonably be questioned. That could mean that he or someone he's related to is too closely tied to the case. But don't worry, the trial will soon take place on the US District Court in New Jersey, so the case against Apple will continue. Accommodation and cost of living concerns are being listed as reasons behind a brain drain of the country's top IT staff. A new survey found that more than one third plan to quit their jobs in the next 2 years and emigrate. And 25 to 34 year old age group had the highest proportion of people intending to relocate at 34%. Auxilian Chief People Officer Niamh Cray says they're also worried about lack of opportunities for growth.
It's important that organisations are really clearly outlining career paths, levels of opportunity, but also flexible working, to making sure that everybody's individual needs as best as we can are adhered to. So things like flexible working practices, well-being programs, but then also effective expectations. What are the goals of the organization? And then regular feedback.
Yeah, it's not easy at the moment. You know, rents are very high, mortgages are high. The cost of everything, including fuel now, has gone up again. But food and everything is up. There's a little bit on everything. So when you get your basket of shopping that used to cost maybe, you know, €30, now it's €45 or something like that. You know, it's gone up significantly. And it is noticeable. It adds up. You know, so it's not easy for people. And then the further you go in towards cities and into city centres, the price goes up of a lot of different things, and include most importantly accommodation and everything like that. So it's not easy for people, and it's not easy for younger people definitely to get on the housing market and things like that. It's not easy at all. Planned excise fuel hikes this summer have been called an attack on rural motorists. So they're planning to put the cost of fuel up once again. It's getting ridiculous. Drivers will have to shell out more money again this August after fuel prices are rising by 4% for petrol and 3% for diesel. this month as excise cuts implemented during the cost of living crisis were reinstated. Almost 4 billion euro in tax was taken in by the state last year, the highest amount in a decade. Sligo Leitrim TD Martin Harkin says those with no other option but to drive will be hit the hardest.
If you look at the average kilometres driven each year, it's about 16,300. Whereas if you live in Sligo and Donegal, the average is about 17,500. And in Leitrim and Roscommon, it's about 19,000. So that means you're going to pay more than the average motorist.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's so many jobs and so many things outside of major cities. You know, it's a little bit better in major cities. If you're in Dublin, you have the Lewis, you have buses, you have lots of different public transport to get you around. But outside of the major cities, if I wanted to go to my sister's house, there's no train, there's no bus, there's no anything going in that exact direction, because it's in the countryside. And there's no, you know, there's no way of exactly getting there and back again. And, you know, I have to drive. And with people going to work, you know, sometimes the buses don't line up right with the, you know, with the time to start for work. You don't want to be arriving an hour before you have to start. And then having to wait an hour after work to get the bus back home again, you know, you prefer to just drive and get home. You want to enjoy your evening and things like that. So it doesn't always line up perfectly. I know it's very handy with Lewis's and things like that in Dublin, where they're going pretty much all the time. You have to just wait 5 minutes and there'll be another one on. But a lot of the buses are sometimes an hour in between, sometimes an hour and a half in between, and it doesn't always line up on time with even if you can get the bus, with work and with different things. And, you know, it's not always easy. And I don't think people should be punished for having a car at all. If they want people driving electric cars, give higher subsidies on that, you know, give people discounts on buying them, or remove the VRT completely on electric cars, and they'll get a lot more people buying them. Incentivize. If you want to be environmental, incentivize it and do that instead of taxing people that can't afford it, you know. Yeah, and don't punish people who can't afford to change their car, who are, you know, using the car they have and hoping it keeps going and everything keeps going good with it because they can't afford to buy a new car because of the cost of living. So it's a vicious circle. If all the jobs were high paid and taxes were low and things like that, people would all have the money and they could go out and buy brand new electric cars and save the environment. But unfortunately, that's not the case and people should not be punished for that. A man named Trevor has set up a support group for other Trevors. 66-year-old Trevor Cunningham, a retired engineer from Devon in the UK, says he wants to rebrand the name to be associated with kindness rather than geeks and nitwits. Trevor's Together has 126 members around the world, according to the Irish Sun. The number of Trevors born in Ireland in recent years was in single-digit figures, with 6 babies named Trevor last year. Only 6 in the whole country, so very, very low. A major new report is recommending that conveyancing goes digital. The legal process of transferring ownership is needed when properties are bought and sold. The Legal Services Regulatory Authority has been examining ways to speed up the process and make it more transparent. Dr. Brian Doherty, CEO of LSRA, says one of the best ways to do that is to change from the current paper model of conveyancing.
It would revolutionise how conveyancing is actually done in the same way as passport applications have been revolutionised, in the same way as filing of returns to revenue have been revolutionised. It would be a case of, you know, in order to keep up, you'd need to buy in. So I'd imagine that the e-conveyancing would be something that all legal practitioners involved in conveyancing would buy in.
Oh yeah, I suppose, look, whatever makes the job a bit faster and whatever helps the process. A sinkhole that appeared in the middle of a village in South Dublin has been patched up. It was unclear what caused part of the road in Sandymount to collapse. Maybe because it was sandy and the ground wasn't wasn't very solid. But hopefully nobody was hurt or anything. But we have a clip here from Tara Duggan. Let's see what she had to say.
At around 4:30 yesterday afternoon, locals noticed a sinkhole had opened up in the middle of Sandymount Village. Pictures posted online show part of a road beside a curb had fallen in outside a busy shop. Gardaí placed a cordon around the hole at Sandymount Green and an on-call crew from the City Council was sent out to inspect it. A temporary repair was made to make the area safe. Further investigations will be carried out today in a bid to find out what caused the sinkhole, with a permanent repair to follow.
Yeah, so it's usually, isn't it, it's originally made on what feels like solid ground, but like erosion can happen underneath the road and things like that. There can be water moving underneath the ground and it can create a hollow underneath that you don't see until it collapses. So that's any of the big ones I've seen before in China and different places where there's a lot of industry going on. Sometimes waterways can be moved or water distribution systems can interfere with things and it end up creating hollows that are not seen underneath roads and underneath pavements and things like that, and they can collapse and sometimes it can be devastating. People in cars and things can fall down very, very deep sinkholes, and many people have died because of it. But luckily, by the looks of it there, nobody was hurt or anything like that. So, and hopefully they can get it repaired and get the underlying issue, which is important as well, get that sorted too. So, Meta says it's fixing HD photo sharing in Facebook Messenger. Messenger is also rolling out group chat shared albums. Facebook rolled out the ability for Messenger users to share 4K photos back in 2017. Now Meta has announced that users can share HD photos in the app. Confused we are too. So we asked about it. The short answer is that here HD means 4K and now 4K photos are more 4K. Okay, so Facebook Messenger comms team represent. I've never used 4K photos. I didn't know you could send a higher. But I don't use Facebook Messenger that much. I'm mostly on WhatsApp. I didn't know. I know you can send HD in WhatsApp, all right. But I didn't know you could send any increased. I just don't like Facebook Messenger. How the pop-up. No, I've disabled that, but it's still annoying. I don't know. I still don't like how Facebook Messenger works. Messenger comms team representative Liz Sweeney clarified in an email to The Verge that 4K, specifically 4096 by 4096 pixels per inch, shared photos were more compressed before, and how they looked was dependent on the network, the conditions of both the sender and receiver. Now Sweeney says they won't be as heavily compressed and users will have a new HD button that enables 4K sharing. And if you don't tap the button, photos will share in 2K instead. Messenger will also let users share files up to 100 MB. That's up from 25 MB limit before, which should make for an easier time sharing videos. They won't need to be split up into smaller chunks before sending. For example, a minute of iPhone video that somebody just shot at 1080p and 60 frames per second in SDR clocked in at 170 MB. So you have a better chance of being able to share. So Messenger is increasing the quality of photos that can be sent. So that's good. Microsoft allegedly pitched DALL-E to the military. The Intercept reported that Microsoft gave a presentation to the Department of Defense that explained how it could use OpenAI's DALL-E 3 and ChatGPT last year. One such use could be for DALL-E to assist in envisioning the battlefield. The reference to computer vision training suggests artificial images conjured by DALL-E could help the Pentagon to better see conditions on the battlefield, a particular boon for finding and annihilating targets. OpenAI softened its stance on the military use of its technology this year. So it's interesting that Microsoft offered up its products to the Department of Defense. That reminds me of a story I heard of a guy called, I think it was like Palmer Lucky or something like that. He had an unusual name, but he was the creator of Oculus, the Oculus headset. And he started off working as repairing iPhones and working as a barista or something like that, saving up money to create parts because he had an idea to make a VR headset. And he actually, in his garage, you know, as many inventions come from, ended up inventing Oculus Rift. And it got picked up by some famous, is it Peter Thiel or some famous, it was Carmack, the computer game inventor, famous guy, ended up investing in him and creating Oculus Rift, the VR headset. And then they got bought up by Facebook. But he came out in support of a company that was supporting Donald Trump or something like that, or he donated to something that Donald Trump was involved in, and he ended up getting fired. So they got bought by Facebook, and he was working as CEO, but of the company he created. But because he wasn't the owner anymore, when he said whatever that didn't go down well, his support for Donald Trump or gave some money towards a fundraiser or something like that, he ended up getting fired. But where it comes into the last story is, since then, they had to pay him out of his contract and all that. So he got over $1 billion or something like that. He started up another company now that uses the same kind of tech or similar kind of tech, but for military use. And his new company, I forget the name of it, but is as big as Oculus was now when he sold it. It's like $1.4 billion. And it's all using VR and AR and stuff like that for the military. So that's where it comes into the last story. So his new company is up and running now again. He went kind of back to zero, and now he's built back up again to as big as his original company. Well, he didn't go back to zero financially, and that helped a lot for himself to be able to invest. And I suppose he knew the concept of his original invention from scratch to multi-billion dollar company. So he was able to use his knowledge and his creativity to start another business, and now it's quite successful again. And he's like drones, targeted drones and things like that. He's invented using AR and AI and different things like that. So that's story. You can now trade in Samsung and Apple tablets for Google's. The US Google Store will give you up to $450 if you trade in select iPads, while Samsung tablets you can net up to $325, 95 Google reports. Starting at $499, the 11-inch Pixel tablet stands out due to its speaker dock, which lets you use it as a de facto smart display. Oh, that's cool. I forgot they had that, yeah. So yeah, it sits into the dock, and it turns into like a Google speaker with a display, which I have a Google speaker with display, but it's not a tablet. But it's a neat idea, with the Pixel tablet. But so I don't know if you can do that in Ireland now, but in the US you can trade in Apple and Samsung tablets towards it. Welcome to the wasteland. All the news of Amazon's Fallout TV series, and this is on The Verge. After decades spent exploring the end of times as a video game, I played the games years ago, yeah, the Fallout games. And now there's newer ones out, but now there's a TV series of it as well. So it's a post-apocalyptic nuclear kind of thing, and there's all these weird machines, and there's kind of hybrid kind of monsters and things like that, and you're trying to navigate this post-apocalyptic world, and you're from this kind of bunker or something. You're released from a bunker, and you're kind of completely unaware of the world above you, and then you go out into the world and you see all the crazy things. So there's some weird juxtapositions, and I suppose it's done for humorous reasons that you're in this terrible, nasty, post-apocalyptic, everything is wrecked around you, and then you go into a building and there's an old piece of tech there that suddenly starts working, and it's, hello, how are you, welcome, you know, it's all bubbly and everything, and like everything around you is laid to waste, but this piece of tech, an old robot or a pop-up like screen or something, is all happy and bubbly and welcoming you and talking to you and everything like that. And there's a lot of that in the game, and it's very entertaining actually. But I haven't watched the TV show yet, but I must give it a look. It's on Amazon. The show is set two centuries after a nuclear war and explores the wasteland from three different perspectives. A vault dweller, yeah, so that's the vault, yeah, venturing to the surface for the first time. Yeah, so that's the theme of the game I played years and years ago. A soldier in the Brotherhood of Steel and a ghoul who has survived since the bombs dropped 200 years ago. The show follows these three characters through a post-apocalyptic version of Los Angeles, and the rest of the cast includes the likes of Kyrie McLachlan, Sarita Choudhury, and Michael Emerson, as well as Zach Cherry. There are 8 episodes in the first season, which starts streaming on April the 10th. So it's not started streaming yet. Oh no, it is. What's the date? Oh, the 11th. Yeah, started yesterday. So in the meantime, stay tuned here for the latest news. So The Verge has the latest news. But yeah. So it's available on Amazon now. I started watching Shogun. Very, very good show. Japanese show on Netflix. And that's very good as well. I'd recommend if you like kind of Game of Thrones, if you like all this politics back and forth and a bit of warring and a bit of lots of different games going on, you'll enjoy Shogun. Very, very good now. Google's AI photo editing tools are expanding to a lot more phones. So I heard a bit about this yesterday. So when I saw it popping up on the news here, I said I'd add that in as well. Features previously exclusive to Pixels or behind a paywall will be free for everyone using Google Photos up to a certain point. So since I've got the Google Pixel 8 and I have... it only works in Google Photos, these kind of advanced photo editors. And I was actually last night using one of them and it was amazing, I have to say. So my wife had photos from when she was a kid and these were photographs or pictures she took on her phone of photographs from when she was a kid. So they were already kind of blurry in the first place. Then she took a picture with her phone. So she sent them to me to show me some of her childhood photos and things, lovely photos. And I said, you know what? There's this unblur feature on Google Photos, but it's only for, but it, this might be added now to other phones, but at the moment it's only for Google Pixel phones and maybe even in the Pixel 8 and stuff. So I uploaded them into my Google Photos and then I used unblur and it came out pin sharp. It looked like, you know, a 1080p kind of video sharpness. It was amazing, actually, because I tried it before, but the photo was extremely blurry and it didn't really fix it. These photos were just about 5 or 10% off of being sharp, but it was very noticeable. You know, it's like you're looking through a net curtain or something. It's just blurry. It's just not sharp. And it sharpened them up. Because these were profile pictures and they were big and clear as well, which helps a lot. If it's in the distance and there's a crowd of 50 people, it doesn't do as good a job. But these were like single profile photos, were a bit off blurry. So they were ideal candidates, but it worked amazing. It cleared them right. And I sent them back to her and she said, how did you do that? She thought it might have been a different photo or something. Did you find that somewhere else? Did somebody send you that? I said, no. I just I did a kind of a repair job on the photos you sent me and I kind of cropped them in and cleaned them up with color-wise and things like that as well. But I sent them back to her. So I think she was even sharing them with her family. She couldn't believe how well they came out. But some of these tools now may be becoming available for other phone users as well, so that'd be good. Google is making AI photo editing features available to a lot more people. Starting on May the 15th, just about all Google Photo users will be able to access features previously limited to Pixel owners and Google One subscribers. A nifty upgrade if you were tired of photos urging you to upgrade to get access to more editing tools. Magic Editor is a Google generative AI photo editing tool and it debuted as one of the headline AI features on the Google Pixel 8 and 8 Pro. These kind of features typically remain exclusive to Pixels for 6 months after the launch. And right on time, Google is bringing it to previous Pixel phones. But it's not stopping there. Any Google Photos user with Android or iOS devices that meet the minimum requirements will be able to use it without a Google One subscription. You'll be just limited to 10 saved edits per month. Pixel owners and paid subscribers, however, you get unlimited use. Oh, that's good. Other features like photo unblur. Yeah, that's the one I used yesterday. If you have a blurry photo, once this becomes available, upload it to your Google Photos, use the unblur, you'll find amazing results if it's a good candidate for it. Magic Eraser is very good as well. You can remove things from the background. It uses, in certain occasions, sometimes it doesn't work very well. I had a picture of two people and then there was a crowd of people behind and it took the individuals that were behind very, very well, took them out. But there was another person standing right over their shoulder. So in the picture, the person was like growing out of their shoulder, we'll say, there was emerging behind their shoulder. Didn't take them out very well. It left a kind of a smudge over their shoulder when it took the person out. It wasn't able to handle it very well. But all the, if you're on a beach and there's a beach ball in the background, you don't want it there, it'll take it out perfectly. You know, if it's a smooth image with an alien object there, it can take it out very, very well. And it works very good for that. So that's the Magic Eraser, which can be used, which used to be only available to Pixel owners on certain Google One or certain Google One subscribers, will be free for all photo users. Google has a full list of these features on its Photos community site, and it uses things like editing, portrait mode, blur, and lighting effects, usually useful but not cutting edge stuff, for better or worse. Some of them are good as well, you know. Yeah, there's a portrait light is very good, it's a very nice one. It kind of blurs the background, it blows up your portrait, makes it look much nicer, so that works quite well. I've used that a good bit. Other generative AI features that launched with the Pixel 8 series, like Best Take is brilliant. Magic Eraser are remaining exclusive. Also, yeah, so Best Take is very good. So if I take six pictures of six people, I can choose the best version of each person for one photo. So if my eyes are closed in one photo and then John's eyes are closed in another and Mary's eyes are closed in another, and they're all different photos, I can choose the one where Mary's eyes are open, my eyes are open, and John's eyes are open, all for one photo, and to make a perfect photo out of it. Once you have five or six photos in the roll, it'll find the other versions of the same photo, find the best version, and swap the heads out, and you'd never know. It's very, very well done. So they're keeping Audio Magic Eraser as well. That works quite good as well with video. You can remove the fuzzy sounds in the back, and it clears up a voice even on a windy day. So very well done as well. They're remaining exclusive to new Pixels just for now. If you're ready to jump into the future of AI powered photo editing and use Magic Editor, you'll need a device with at least 64-bit chip, 4 GB of RAM, and either iOS 15 or Android 8.0. Those are pretty generous requirements. Yeah, so most phones have more than that nowadays, unless you get really, really entry-level phones. Most have more than 4 GB of RAM. So even I got a new kind of budget tablet recently, it would have more than that. So maybe I can use it on that, would be quite good. And if you're somehow still using an iPhone 5, not being able to use Magic Editor is probably the least of your concerns. So that's funny. So the last few bits and pieces, Microsoft is bringing its Xbox dashboard to the web with party chat and more. Xbox Cloud Gaming is getting an updated interface with features you'd normally find on an Xbox console. Microsoft is previewing a new Xbox Cloud Gaming interface today that includes the social features and UI you'd normally find in the Xbox on the dashboard. The new interface includes access to a web version of Xbox Party Chat so that you can browse, you can use a browser to join a call with friends instead of dedicated Xbox desktop and mobile apps. The updated web interface also includes the ability to find and manage Xbox friends, send messages, view user profiles and achievements, and even access notifications. Microsoft is testing this initially with Xbox insiders before rolling the interface out to all Xbox Cloud Gaming users. So you can kind of do everything except, well, can you play the games remotely? Maybe you can even do that, I'm not sure. I like with PlayStation, I have a Google Chromecast with TV, and I can Bluetooth connect the PS5 controller to it and remote play the games on that. So that's quite handy. We'll find out later what's the best video game of the past year, what the best video game of the past year was at the BAFTA Games Awards. Baldur's Gate 3 is leading the pack with nominations in 10 categories, including for Best Game. Meanwhile, Hogwarts Legacy from the Harry Potter world created by J.K. Rowling could win in the animation or family categories. Yeah, that was a fantastic game as well, Hogwarts Legacy. Very, very good game. I played a good bit of that. That was probably last year, but one of my favourite games of the last decade was maybe Ghost of Tsushima. So I hope that won whatever games was going that time. And the last story for today, author Alexander McCall Smith says children should be taught about the importance of friendship at school. He says, although children instinctively form friendships, it's not necessarily taught how true friends should behave. I suppose too much of using phones and tech and everything like that and playing games and not enough interaction. The Scottish author who sold 30 million books says personal contact is the best way to keep the flame of friendship alive, and sending an annual Christmas card is not enough, according to the London Times. So get out there and make friends and get off the phones and the tech. So that's been Tech Thursday for today. As always, you can call 069-66200 or you can text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800 or you can email patrick102fm@gmail.com. That has been Tech Thursday. Thank you very much for listening and I'll be with you again next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.